So 2021, off to a great start.
I'm going to have to stop you right there.
The bills make me wanna shout. Kick your heels up and shout. Throw your hands up and
oh,
shout.
Oh, baby.
Throw your head back and shout. Come on
oh,
now.
Oh, baby. The bills are
making it happen now.
Bills. I know this isn't a sports podcast, but I don't know what you're talking about when it comes to 2021 because.
Say well. Wow. So that overshadows all the other shit that happened within the first week of 2021.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you have that to, you know, sustain you right now.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. Why? What happened?
Yeah, there's nothing else going on in the world, right?
What happened?
Nothing. NBD.
6 days without incident. Mm-hmm. Was it six? Yeah, six
yeah.
days.
Yeah.
Without incident. And here we are.
Mm-hmm. And we actually, I think it was on Monday of last week, our first day back after the holiday break.
Yeah.
I had a really great day at work. And like, I don't remember what happened. We had a couple things happen that were just like, wow. Okay.
We got our checks. A stimulus.
We did? Okay.
Yeah, on the 4th.
Was it? Yep, yeah, that's right. And, but yeah, just a couple things kind of fell into place and things were going well on our return to work. And we were like, okay, so maybe 2021 really is going to redeem itself. And right. then 2 days later, it said, hold my beer, 2020.
Yeah. Basically. Welcome to While She's Napping. I am Adam.
And I'm Cindy.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I don't know why. Have you ever, you never watched wrestling? There's this meme, I'm sure you're familiar with Shawn Michaels. There's this meme going around about 2020 to 2021. And when Shawn Michaels first came into the WWF at the time, he was in a tag team. And when he broke up with that tag team, he turned heel. Mm-hmm. And the first time that phrase was ever used, turning heel, was he sweet chin music to his tag team partner, heel okay. kicked
yep.
right into the face, mm-hmm. hence heel turn, in the barbershop for Brutus the Barbecue Beefcake. And he shoved his tag team partner into the barbershop window. It's famous. Anyways, so if you're a wrestling fan, right before Shawn Michaels turned heel, he was playing possum and held his tag team partner's hand up in the air with him. And his tag team partner in text says 2020 and Shawn Michaels says 2021 and a heel turn's coming.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. Sounds
so
accurate.
That's mm-hmm. basically what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's still early. Today we are recording this Sunday the 10th. It is still early. We're only 10 days into 2021. It's bound to get better. Right? Save for a civil war, what else could there be?
Well, that's what I was going to say is in 2020, you know, the end of 2020, when we did our reflection, we said, what else could happen? And then lo and behold, violent takeover at the Capitol 6 days into the year.
All right. We'll get into that in a bit, but before we continue with today's topic and talking about the shit that was on the 6th, speaking of 2021, our welcoming 2021 episode was very well received. A decent amount of listenership and downloads for that. So for that, we thank you. If you're new to the show and you haven't heard us before and you're interested in today's topic when it comes to toxic individuality, we welcome you to the show. We hope you enjoy it. And if you do, even if you don't, you should subscribe to the show. Wherever you're listening to your podcast on, we're there. Whatever platform, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever, we are there. Subscribe. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please give us 5 stars and a quick review. Also, we're on all the social medias out there, even though that might be bleeding into this topic today as well, social media. But if you use it safely and you use it responsibly, we invite you to contact us.
We are on Facebook at facebook.com/whileshesnapping. We're on Instagram at whileshesnapping. We're kind of on Twitter. We're not banned, but we're there at She's Napping Pod. And you can email us at whileshesnapping@gmail.com.
Yeah, that was a long time coming, him mm-hmm. being banned
yeah.
on Twitter. Trump, that is. Yep. But yeah, I think that, you know, save for a civil war, the only thing we can think of, or that I can think of, that is going to, you know, one up what happened on the 6th would be a nuke, maybe? Oh, you know, God. Like, if it's not a civil war, what's the worst that could happen? A nuclear war, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I just want to get past the next 10 days.
I don't think it's going to end there. I really don't.
Maybe not.
When it comes to the inauguration, I don't think it's going to end there. But we should have seen this coming. Apparently, there mm-hmm. were breadcrumbs everywhere mm-hmm. about this. And law enforcement should have seen it coming. The FBI should have seen this coming, which makes me, we've talked about conspiracy theories, and I'm sure that's going to come up on today's episode too, but, you know, it makes me wonder how deep does this run when it comes to law enforcement, when it comes to people that are supposed to be protecting the general public and setting aside their political views and biases. How much of this was, I don't want to say orchestrated, but assisted by enforcers such as, you know, police officers or agents or security? How many of them knew about this beforehand and helped this happen? Legitimately helped, not backed off because they were overwhelmed by the sheer number of people, but said, I'm a part of this. Yeah. And I'm going to remove myself from my post.
Right. I feel like at any time there's an event like this that's chaotic and you see clips that people take a video on their phone or whatever, it's really hard to get the full context of whatever is happening.
Right.
But there were several videos that showed different levels of what you're talking about. I mean, there were videos where officers were really holding the line and putting their full body at risk to try to hold them back and protect the building. But then there was that one clip that you showed me that showed the officers basically backing up and letting them through.
Right.
And yeah, it's hard not to wonder what was behind that. What did they think was going to result from that? And
trampled? That's the only counterargument.
Right. Like, was there some other thing that we're not aware of because we're not trained in law enforcement or security that we can't understand and we don't know the whole context of what was happening, that there was a reason they had to choose to back down versus hold the line? But it's really hard to wrap your head around what that could have been.
I don't know. When you think about why this is happening, the disconnect is, you know, when you say, don't you care about the Constitution? Don't you care about the sacred nature of the chamber, of the house, the Capitol? And they would say, they being those that were part of this insurrection, let's call it what it is, this terrorist attack, they would say, we are protecting the Constitution.
Right.
So there's a misinterpretation of what it means to protect the Constitution, because in these people's eyes, they are protecting the Constitution because they're protecting the rightful quote-unquote winner of the election, and they're convinced that the result is fraudulent.
Right. They believe that the government is partaking in
an uprising.
Or, you know, they're allowing for this injustice to be upheld and for the election and their sacred right to vote in a participate in a free and fair election is being violated. But that whole thing, it just makes my head spin thinking about the people who are so enraged by the allegations, completely unfounded allegations of voter fraud or people voting twice or dead people voting and all these things that, of course, happen in isolation in any given year. When you think about a dead person voting, okay, there could have been a registered voter who
mailed it in and then died. Right.
Like, and when you look up the record, it's going to show that they're not alive. Right. But I mean, you just don't know the full circumstances. And I feel like those small incidents have, I'm sure, they're probably clerical errors here from there. Like, it's inevitable that that's going to happen. But
well, this is the benefit or the risk rather, or the assumed risk of not having digital ballots.
Yeah, that's a whole nother. I mean, there's going to be error no matter what the format is.
No,
though.
But it's more dangerous if it is digital because
until
it's more likely
breach.
To be... Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's more likely to be compromised.
Oh, that's
what,
yeah, you're right. Right, but when you have paper ballots in the system that we have, just with the sheer numbers of voters that we have...
It's just human error.
Exactly, and yeah. It's inevitable, but it doesn't happen at any rate even close enough to sway an election. And on the other hand, you have... voter suppression that's been happening forever. Certain communities who have not been able to vote because of laws and policies that were put in place with the intention of suppressing their vote and making it difficult for them to vote. And the people who, like the people who stormed the Capitol, where is their outrage about those people not being able to participate in a free and fair election and not being able to exercise their right to vote? Why
They'd
are they
say
not-
that's fake news.
Exactly. It's just they live in a different reality.
It's an echo chamber.
Yeah, but the unfounded allegations that have been thrown, like also the narrative of law and order. Trump tried to pursue every legal avenue that he could possibly find
right.
to try to challenge the results of the election. And they were thrown out because there was no evidence. Do they
Not
really
all of
think?
Them. I think two of them were.
One.
No,
only
I think
one.
Two.
I've my latest.
Doesn't matter.
Whatever.
It was. A percentage, a small
right.
percentage.
It was like 62 out of 63 or 64
sure.
were thrown out. They wouldn't even hear it. And do they think, you know, that this group of people who say that they ascribe so tightly to the principles of law and order, do they think all of these courts are corrupt?
Yes.
And like, how? Like, how can you think in all these different states, different counties with different judges who have all different backgrounds? Like,
it is... more believable for me that is more believable than a child sex ring run by a cabal.
Well, yeah, that's a different level of crazy.
And people drink adrenochrome to
yeah,
stay young.
That's next level.
But these are the same people.
Some of them. I bet there are people who were in that crowd at the Capitol who aren't QAnons.
I don't know.
I'm sure that was a large majority, but I think there's also people who just think it was an unfair election, but maybe they don't rise to the level of being part of QAnon.
But for me, government corruption isn't far-fetched, right? And
no,
that,
it's not, but I think
so
on that
you
scale,
latch onto
it is.
That, it's these other things become a slippery slope, and they become, to certain individuals, more believable. I'm not saying this happened. I'm not suggesting
no,
that there
I
was
know.
Voter fraud or the government on a large scale is suppressing the quote-unquote rightful vote of Donald Trump. I'm not saying that. I'm saying when you assume corruption in the government, anything's possible.
I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, I know it's possible, but like...
It's very unlikely.
That's what
I don't
mean.
Believe it happened.
No, I know you don't. I'm speaking to a hypothetical person who does think that. Like, it's kind of like when we talked about pandemic and we talked... Or climate change, people who think it's a hoax or a conspiracy. It's like, how could that happen on such a huge scale to have this like level of global coordination to make up to this story of something that's not really
well,
happening?
Then you
it's
believe
like,
in... the NWO, you believe in the Illuminati.
Yeah, I know. It's all crazy.
You know, there has to be a boogeyman figure out there. We're getting off track.
Yeah.
I want to tie this up to today's topic of toxic individuality. And if I was to, that sounds weird. Anyways, if I were to make this connection to toxic masculinity, if you recall back to that episode, we didn't say masculinity in and of itself was a bad thing, but when you, you know, put it into hyperdrive and sort of spill this into the fabrics of our culture, this according to you, it becomes toxic. I assume because of the actions of certain individuals during this pandemic of how... they, for instance, just want to do what they want to do. They ignore protocols and they put other people in danger. That goes from individuality to toxic individuality because, as such, when you spill that into the fabric of people's behaviors, it becomes harmful. So I assume that's what we mean by toxic individuality. And to be fair, this is a fairly new, if not brand new, phenomena that is being introduced as a result of COVID.
I think so. I mean, it's probably not a new concept, but I think it's very evident as a result of the pandemic. But I had never heard of this term until there was an article in NPR at the end of the year talking about this in the context of the pandemic, specifically how it related to medical professionals in rural parts of the U.S. who have been quitting their jobs and moving as a result of feeling this, the toxicity of people being so hell-bent on their individual freedoms and rights and only caring about themselves, essentially, and how things affect their life. And I just thought it was so interesting how these doctors were describing this. Like, they've grown up in these small towns in rural America where the reason why some of them, at least the ones that were interviewed for this piece, were describing that they moved to these places. They weren't from there necessarily.
This is before the pandemic.
Yes, yeah. When they originally moved. I think there was a town in Kansas that was, this doctor was from. But she wanted to raise her family there because she...
Small town
values, exactly. Yeah. She wanted to be part of a tight-knit community where your neighbor helps your neighbor and you're all, you know, in this together sort of thing. And you help each other when you're in need. And she wanted to instill that in her children. And she was describing how much the switch flipped when COVID became a thing, that she went from having neighbors and family friends come up to her at church and ask her for friendly medical advice because they respected her as a doctor and respected her opinion and her expert opinion, to lashing out at her and yelling at her because they disagreed with what they were being told to do. And all of a sudden, she was not respected in her field and it became a toxic place for her to be.
I don't know that, again, we did this with toxic masculinity and your stance was a little bit different than mine. And I said, I don't know that it exists. I'm not sure that if we break it down layer by layer, toxic individualism exists, because they're not doing it because they, being the people that partake in those arguments, those pushbacks for COVID protocols, they're not doing it because they believe in their heart of hearts that it's pointless. They're doing it because someone is modeling that behavior and they're taking it upon themselves to listen to that outlet, aka Trump, and latch onto that as a reason not to do it. I feel like toxic individualism, that you're on its core, if it does exist, it's something that's so selfish that all you care about is yourself. What we're describing here when it comes to people that ignore protocols, I feel like they're doing it in a way, maybe subconsciously, in honor of Donald Trump. You see what I mean? How maybe. It's not so individualistic.
Right. Well, that's the irony of it, is that they feel this way because they've been told to feel this way because of propaganda.
Right. So how is it individualism?
Because I think the argument is just based in, I'm going to choose to, maybe not consciously, but I think subconsciously, it's easier to choose to believe those things because it supports your
It's
wants.
Utilitarian. Oh, it's, sorry. To choose to believe it's a hoax.
If you're believing the propaganda and yeah. you're, you know, it makes your life
yeah, more
convenient.
Yeah, it enables you to do what
you keep
you
going
do.
About your yeah. business and yeah. not have to sacrifice your
freedoms.
Well,
that's what we talked about when it came to climate change, or it comes to climate change, right. is that if you adhere to these beliefs, or rather the scientific data that lends credence towards climate change, you have to radically adjust of your behavior. And that is uncomfortable and people don't right. want to do that.
Right. And having to adjust to life in the middle of a pandemic is uncomfortable and not fun,
but
and
it's
very
temporary.
Hard.
That's
I
the
know,
difference
but that's
between
what we said
this
in
and
March
climate
when we
change.
Thought it was too. I know. I'm not making a direct comparison. I'm just saying, I don't want to downplay the difficulty that this pandemic has.
Oh,
put
no,
on
no,
people.
No. But if there's one thing that you can latch on to, it's temporary, whether
yes.
that's a year, 2 years.
I know, but
it
that's a long
end.
Time.
I know.
But that's a long time.
For sure. I'm not downgrading the severity of it. It's just, you know, I get it. I maybe it does exist. Maybe toxic individuality or toxic individualism is a misnomer. I'm not sure that that name, and I don't want to get caught in semantics, I don't know that that name is satisfying enough to describe this phenomenon.
I think you're misunderstanding the term. Like, I think you're making too much of a direct comparison to toxic masculinity. I think when I think of this term, toxic individualism or toxic individuality, I'm thinking of it being, it's kind of like, have you heard of toxic positivity?
No.
So that's another term that's pretty, I know, but like, it makes sense. It's just people are starting to name it. Like, these are concepts and, you know, things that have been around forever. People are just trying to put a name to it. It's not saying it's a bad thing to be positive. It's saying there are times when someone, like, I think someone who would be considered toxically positive is someone who, if you go to them with a problem or you're having a hard time or you're grieving or something, and you go to this person and they say, oh, chin up, everything's going to be okay.
Right.
Like, that's a form of toxic positivity. Like, that's not what that person needs to hear. They just need you to empathize with them, and it's like, let them grieve if that's what they're doing or whatever. Like, I feel like it's this, it's that more similar to that than it is to toxic masculinity. Like, it's, I just wanted to kind of tease apart this, like, the threshold of, you know, being a free thinker and being independent has a lot of value. Like, but at what point does it become this level of talk? Just like being a positive person is good.
I think you're misunderstanding what I'm saying, or maybe you're not. I understand that they're doing this as a result of selfish behavior. I'm saying, is it truly individualistic if it's influenced?
Maybe not, but that's the behavior that's being exhibited.
Okay.
You know, like, they're behaving in such a way that they're protecting number one. Like, they're most concerned
about
their individuality.
But they're also honoring Führer Trump, you know?
Maybe, but maybe not always. I feel like there are some people who are just fiercely independent who maybe are apolitical or don't necessarily support Trump, who still feel this way, who feel like, I don't want to wear a mask. I'm going to go about my business because I'm free to do that because I'm an American and I have rights. And you can't tell me what to do.
What's the difference between this and extreme selfishness?
I don't know.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sort of shitting all over the topic, and I don't mean to. That's not my intention. It's just when you have these terms, I think it sort of, I don't know, makes it sound worse than it is. Whereas I can say, you're just fucking selfish, and that's good enough, you know?
Okay, so you can have a different name for it. I'm just saying they put a name to it, and it's a phenomenon in that it's not just about someone living their life in a selfish way, and therefore, you know, they don't have good relationships with their family, or they don't, you know, have good working relationships because they act selfishly. It's taking it to the next level, exactly, because this example from this, you know, this article, causing doctors to resign and move out of their towns because it's not individual. It's not, I had one awful interaction with a person at church who doesn't take me seriously anymore because they don't believe COVID is a thing. It's one after the other after the other. It's the vast majority of their community is partaking in this individualistic. They're taking that stance that their individual freedom, their individualism is more important than their community. And they're putting themselves before their community in the context of something that is going to harm everyone unless you approach it from a community perspective.
Maybe.
Most likely. You can't defeat a virus, a pandemic that's contagious like this if people aren't working together.
Right, but I don't know that it's going to harm everyone. Some people could be asymptomatic and there is like a 98%.
Right, but that still has results.
Of course. I'm not saying that it wouldn't spread. And I'm not saying there's no danger to it. I'm just saying it's not necessarily deadly.
I didn't say that.
Right.
I'm saying you can't.
We were talking about that. What makes this toxic?
Well, maybe not deadly, but it's still. I mean, it didn't kill this doctor, the toxic individuality that she was experiencing, but it caused her to leave her job and move her family. Yeah. And that's not a good look either.
No. Look, and again, I'm not. I recognize that this is a thing, right? We talk about it all the time that people are saying my rights, my freedoms, my ability to get my fucking haircut trumps everything. And you know, that isn't what this is about. This isn't the seatbelt law. Now, if we were talking about the seatbelt law when it comes to this, I can get on board. I can much more appreciate the stance if someone was hellbent saying, it's my life, it's my body, I should be able to choose to wear a seatbelt or not. I can get on board with that. Don't necessarily disagree with you not wearing a seatbelt, but I certainly agree with the notion that it's your right to choose whether to wear one or not.
Right, and it doesn't necessarily affect anybody else.
No, and you get these lunatics that are like, well, you can go through the car window and then the other car. Do you understand how much force it would take for you to go through two windshields, not just one?
Yeah.
It's rare, but the point is, I can get on board with that because you're literally, most of the time, the only one being put at risk unless there's someone else in the car or whatever.
It's kind of crazy that we need a law to tell people to wear a seatbelt.
Yeah, but it's
an individual decision because it's an individual action that's meant to protect yourself.
It's your choice, right? When it comes to mask wearing or protocols, you know, social distance, they're doing it to protect everybody in the given area.
Well, it's the same thing with smoking.
Exactly.
Drunk driving, because it puts other people in danger.
Yes.
Any public health law that we have in place is to protect the public and yourself, ultimately. Like, you know, we talked about pollution on the climate change episode. Like, yeah, okay, maybe you can't, you're being told if you're a company or an industry or whatever, that you can't pollute, you can't use this certain chemical, or you're limited in your emissions. It's so that you also, as an individual, can breathe clean air and have clean water to drink in your community. Like, It benefits everybody if everyone works together for
these. Adheres to it.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, you know, when you are dealing with the pandemic, and I'm, you know, we're going to look back on this, and even now we can maybe classify it as, this is an anomaly. It really is. When it comes to these type of psychological dispositions or these new phenomena behavior or behaviors, it's an anomaly. Right. And that's why we talked about it before when it came to, you know, I think it was the Christmas episode of how you celebrate Christmas during a pandemic. And, you know, we're sort of self-navigating this. We're figuring it out as we go along. We're going to look back on this. And I do think there's going to be a snap period where people are just like, let's get back to normal. Let's get back to how everything used to be. And for the large, by and large, it will be that way. Right. And we'll just sort of, eventually, these individual, you know, sort of behaviors will sort of fade, right? These pushback towards mask wearing and stuff, that's not going to be a thing. My problem will be, what portions of science are you going to disregard?
That's
and
my concern.
Push away
is the distrust that's being sowed.
Well, so you have people that are on their deathbeds because of COVID, and you have nurses and doctors telling this individual, is there anyone you want us to call? And some of them are saying, no, because I'm going to be fine. And then they just die, right? And again, you can call that toxic individualism, and I understand why you would. But to me, and especially for relating to this to the pandemic, it just constantly just boils down to misinformation and adhering to your false god of Trump. That's what makes it. I don't want to keep going back to it, but I struggle calling this an individual problem. I would much rather call this a groupthink problem, an echo chamber problem.
Well, that's what's interesting about it is, I agree with you. That's what it is. Like, that's what's so ironic is that the people ascribing to this are saying,
it's about me.
It's about me, and I know better than this doctor. I whatever. Like, if you think this is what blows my mind. If someone sees a YouTube video or they see a meme or something, and now they think, oh, I have the inside info. I know the truth. I know more than this doctor does, or this expert in infectious disease or epidemiology. I know better, and I'm not going to like fall for this conspiracy of trying to take away my freedoms and tell me to wear a mask. The irony in the fact that that person thinks that they are standing up for themselves and like preserving their freedom, when in reality they were just puppeted by this propaganda,
or they picked it up from social media.
That's what I mean. Like, it's being propagated through social media by people sharing it and by this groupthink phenomenon. Mm. That is what confuses me so much. That's why I thought this topic was so interesting, because the types of people who are exhibiting these toxically individualistic behaviors are the same people who are buying into this misinformation and propaganda, which is not an individual thing.
Before we hit the break, do you think a way to combat this? Because I was thinking about it while you said, you know, how they push back against scientists and whatnot. I don't necessarily think that the pushback is towards scientists, right? All scientists. I think it starts at the top, like people from Fauci, and people just assume people in these positions of science are like Fauci, right? So if you didn't have a Fauci, and again, hold on, don't get it twisted. I understand the importance of having a CDC. I understand the importance of having all these, you know, scientific research programs in the government. But do you think a way to dissuade this is to not have government officials make these claims, so people aren't thinking, oh, you're just part of the government conspiracy? Rather, if it was just a dude, right?
I mean, Fauci basically is just a dude.
But he's part of a cabinet.
But he's a lifetime scientist.
People don't care. That's a lifetime to them of corruption.
Okay, so this is what, this gets me all the time. Like, when people think of the government or mm-hmm. public health, I know, like you're saying, there are the people who are the faces of our government, people at the top, our elected officials, the, you know, the president's cabinet, all of that, secretaries of the different agencies and departments. But the government is largely made up of a civilian workforce, federal employees who go into public service, who don't make a lot of money, who are usually really well educated and phenomenal at what they do and experts in their field. Because they can't be. I'm saying the federal workforce is a pretty large number of people, and those people are working in the trenches, working their asses off with cut budgets every year with very little support from the government, you know, because the majority of our government's budget, not saying it's right or wrong or good or bad, but the vast majority goes to the military, and the rest of our government is, you know, we have people who are working five people's jobs and being asked to do more with less all the time. And these are public servants, and these are the people who the information trickles up from. They're the ones on the ground in the field doing the hard work, doing the research, working with other, you know, nonprofit organizations, working with universities and other professionals in the field who are not part of the government. And they work collaboratively to conduct their business and to conduct this science. And that goes up and up and up the chain to the finally the people who end up dispelling the information to you. I'm not saying that government corruption never happens. I'm not saying the spokespeople don't ever, you know, misspeak or misinterpret, or that everyone in the federal workforce always agrees with what ends up getting decided at the top. But I don't like how I feel like a lot of people just lump. They forget that the government is made up of real people.
Yes, they forget the nuances beneath them.
Yes.
Right? They think the government is the White House.
Right.
And Senate.
There's
and
thousands the House. Of employees.
I understand. But my point is it wouldn't matter, because these people are so, you know, frantic that even if we said, oh, this is just some accomplished doctor independent of the government, they wouldn't believe it. They would find...
Well, it's the thing is, a lot of time, with the government, when they make decisions and when the CDC provides public guidelines or recommendations, it's cited by peer-reviewed...
People don't know how to read that.
I know, but like a peer-reviewed citation means that it's reviewed and approved and edited and analyzed by independent reviewers, people who are not part of the government.
People don't know how to analyze that. I don't know how to analyze it. I understand that that exists, and that's the formula of
right, but
it.
But you understand that a reliable, you can pretty easily identify a reliable source based on whether or not it cites peer-reviewed publications.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying I would get lost in the weeds reading one of those.
Absolutely. I'm not saying you have to be able to know how to read the scientific journals and understand all of the details. It's not reasonable. But I'm saying just to be able to recognize that these government organizations are making decisions based on science that comes from the non-governmental scientists. Like, it's the scientific community at large. It's not just the government.
All right. We're approximately a little bit more than 35 minutes in. Let's take a break right here. And I want to relate it back to the happenings of the 6th when it comes to toxic individualism and expand from there when it comes more to the pandemic, if that's cool.
Okay.
All right. Hang tight. So when it comes to what happened on the 6th, I think we can, you know, I don't want to get tied too much into this, but when we look at the actions, and of course this is a result of groupthink, like we said, this is a result of misinformation, this is a result of people being in their echo chamber of lies, misinformation, and legitimate fake news, which is the irony of all this because they call legitimate news fake news. There is a sense of, you know, we're doing this for the Constitution. We're doing this for we're saving America. It's a revolution. You know, there is a groupthink mentality in there, but, you know, when we're talking about legitimate revolutions, we're talking about people that are legitimately oppressed. And none of these individuals are oppressed. None of them. And they think they're doing something, and it's got to be a self-fulfilling prophecy for them. It's got to be a self-gratifying action that they're I don't necessarily think they believe they're doing it for America. I think they're doing it for themselves and Trump. Bringing it back to the whole, is it truly individualistic? And we could say it's partially individualistic because they want to feel, as individuals, like they accomplish something, mm-hmm. but for Trump, because they have nothing else, it seems.
But they're saying it's to save our democracy.
But how can it be saving our democracy if we're ransacking?
That's the irony.
The place that represents and protects
because
the,
they
our democracies.
Thought that our democracy was going to be shat on because they thought that an election was going to be certified that was invalid.
Yeah.
I know. It's an endless cycle.
Did you see the latest that they think, you know, when Trump, before he got banned from Twitter, he made a statement on a video saying he denounces what happened.
Oh, yeah. And that he said I love you. You're very special.
No. That was the video outside. This was when he was inside the White House. He was, you know, it was the closest thing he came to a concession. He said,
okay, so it was one after that.
Yes, there will be a new administration.
Right. But he wouldn't name Joe Biden.
The QAnons and the people on Parler and stuff swear that's CGI'd. That's not him. They swear.
Didn't I say that? I said that either they're going to say, I didn't call that. I didn't say they were going to say that it was fake, but I said they are going to twist it to say, well, of course he has to say that to preserve because he's going to get impeached or he's going to get, you know, 25th Amendment, removed from office, whatever. Like, he's just saying what he has to do to please them, but it's not over. Like, you'll see what's coming. It'll be like nothing you've ever seen before. Like, they'll just say, this is what we have to do to give the mirage of, you know, to keep things in order, but there's more to come.
Listen, two things about that. You know what's on when Trump gets banned from Pinterest.
Oh, he got banned from Pinterest?
He did. So it's on. How is he going to make a pin board?
He's going to go to OnlyFans. Yeah, I keep seeing that meme. True. It's really funny.
You know what's bad? When Alex Jones denounces QAnon.
Yeah.
You know, I can get behind gay frogs drinking water, making them gay. But QAnon is where
I draw
the line.
He's like the master of conspiracy theories, and even he doesn't
believe
it.
Well, maybe it's because
they're stepping on his toes. You know, he was the guy.
He wants to be back in the limelight with his own crazy shit.
Yeah, and no one has, like, Q has now taken over Alex Jones as the ultimate conspiracy theorist source.
Right.
And maybe he's like, yo, this is cutting into my brand.
It's true.
They're Pepsi, he's Coke.
Yeah.
Cutting right in. Anyways.
This is probably a good time just for a PSA on the First Amendment. I think most of our listeners probably understand this distinction, but it's impossible not to see it flying around on social media that
this is a private violation of the
right. A private company like Twitter or Facebook saying you're violating our rules, therefore you're losing your privilege of being on in this community or using our platform is not a violation of the First Amendment.
Right.
It does not impede on free speech. Trump, and in the case of Trump, he's the fucking president. He can go to the podium and speak to the American people whenever the fuck he wants and hold a press briefing or anything like that. Like, he has plenty of avenues available to him to speak his mind and say whatever he has to say. It is not up to these companies to host him or allow him to use his platform if he's going to misuse it and violate their rules. That's their decision to make. It's not a violation of the First Amendment.
It's the analogy that I've heard that I appreciate is if you own a bar like or a music venue, and once a week you do an open mic night, and one person during that open mic night at one time came up to the mic and just started saying, fuck you, fuck ends, I hate everyone, I hate black people, but and they just cut them off. That's not disrupting your First Amendment right.
Right.
You own that bar. You can say, get out.
Right.
You are not allowed to use this microphone.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a violation.
Right.
Of,
you can't get
Twitter,
arrested for that. You can't have the government come down on you because of something you said, might, unless it's a threat or harassment or something like that.
I mean, that could be classified as a hate crime. But my point is that the microphone is Twitter.
Yeah.
And Twitter is the bar. Right. So like, or rather the platform is the bar.
The owners of the company are this equivalent
Jack
of the owners of the bar.
Jack owns the bar there. So Twitter can ban you. People
and
have
take away your microphone
for less.
Yeah.
And it's not a violation of free speech.
It's taken 4 years. He's been tweeting for more than 4 years.
When does it come to a point where people, instead of saying, oh, if you don't have, you know, lib speak, you're going to get censored. You know, if the majority of these bannings are happening because you're saying racist shit
and inciting violence,
it's no longer a left or right thing. Or maybe the right needs to take a hard look in the mirror and say, maybe we're kind of fucked up in what we're putting out there.
Right. Maybe there's a reason this pattern exists.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not the people adhering to liberal ideologies. Maybe it's what you're fucking saying.
Objectively.
Yes.
That rhetoric is more dangerous than what comes from the left in general.
All right.
Okay.
Anyways, let's ring it back. Go ahead.
Okay. okay. So do you want to move into how we've seen this kind of manifest in our life and our, you know, how we've been navigating the pandemic and some of these
instances?
Well,
I assume this isn't going to be dissimilar to any listener's experience.
Oh, probably not. But I want to talk specifically about what has happened with our childcare situation and a family that we knew who went through something really awful. So we made the decision to, it's pretty obvious. We're on the end of the spectrum where we're super cautious about COVID, and we very much limited our social interactions. We very much limit our time we spend in public places, and we were hesitant to send our child back to daycare when it reopened last summer. I think it opened in June.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
At first we didn't send her back. We waited about a month. We knew that it was going to take some time for them to get used to the new protocols and like find their groove, and we just kind of wanted to wait. So we had the flexibility to do that, so we took advantage. And then we sent her back in July after the July 4th holiday, and everything had been fine. Like, there were no cases. Granted, this was the summer. Numbers were pretty low in general. And then, so we went months without anything, not one case at the school. And then after Halloween, so it was around Veterans Day, it was like mid-November, all of a sudden there were 3 cases in a week, all from different classrooms within the school. So these were unrelated children who weren't even interacting with one another. It's not like one kid came and then two other kids caught it. it was three separate individual students from three separate individual families who all brought it in around the same time. And it was so hard. On the one hand, I don't want to judge. I don't know most of the other families who go to this school. I have no idea what they do for a living. I mean, they could have parents who are nurses in a COVID ward, for all I know. Like, they could be on the front lines. They could be working in groceries, in the grocery store. They could be doing very high-risk jobs that they have no choice but to do. I don't hold that against them at all. Like, that's a risk that we take, sending her to daycare. But it was really hard to ignore that that happened 2 weeks after Halloween.
Right.
And on Halloween, you know, we saw in our neighborhood, we still passed out candy, but I put a table, you know, at the end of the walkway and there was no interaction. But we saw families trick-or-treating in large groups. We saw people walking around without masks. We saw people handing out candy at their front door without masks, like nothing was happening. And it was really, really alarming to me to see that outbreak happen at that time, and extremely difficult to ignore or think that it didn't have anything to do with Halloween. And so at that point, we decided to take her. She had to get tested because she was a direct contact of one of the positive students. Luckily, she tested negative, but we decided not to send her back because by now we were moving into Thanksgiving and Christmas and assumed that there was going to be more gatherings and cases were just going to keep going up.
Which they did.
And she's still home now. We still haven't sent her back because the cases just keep surging. And it just brings it home to me that I don't think I've mentioned this before. Like, people are taking their own approach in terms of. And this is in the context of thinking of if you're a family who has a child who's going to school or going to daycare, especially if your child is young enough to not wear a mask. Everything that your family does and everything that your child does and every person that your child interacts with, you are increasing the risk of every person in your child's daycare or school of contracting COVID and bringing it home to their family who you don't know. If they are elderly, immunocompromised, whatever. And it just saddens me that I feel like, and again, I'm going on a lot of assumption because I don't know most of the families that are daycare, but it feels like it's not unlikely that there's a lot of this individualism happening where people are like, well, I feel comfortable going trick-or-treating with this group of kids from the neighborhood.
Or I don't want my kids to miss out on that.
Right. And I still want to give out candy because I want to bring joy to the kids in my neighborhood. And fine, that's why I gave out candy.
Right.
I didn't want we did everything we could to make this Halloween fun within reason, trying to do it safely. And I feel like that's a symptom of this like toxic individuality is we're all like living in this bubble of trying to keep our own family safe and do what's best for our family. And there's nothing wrong with that. But for some reason, I feel like there's this disconnect. Like for me, I feel like every time I send her to school, I know that she's interacting with seven other kids in her classroom who are all, you know, under 3 years old who don't wear their masks. And she's sharing her germs with everybody and her teachers who we love and are putting themselves at risk every day, too, being around all these germy ass kids who don't wear masks and are not good about hygiene in general as a toddler. So It made me very upset that this happened. And I feel like this toxic individuality or individualism is contributing to this like lack of community within these groups. Like, I wish that daycares and small schools, to the extent that they can, or like classrooms of people would view it as their little community, their little pod. And we need to protect each other because it's a priority for our kids to be able to go to school. It's a priority for our kids to go to their daycare. So our number one concern should be protecting ourselves and the other families within that group.
Well, it doesn't seem to register to some people that the actions you take when it comes to COVID has far-reaching consequences other than direct contacts. Now, I know given the data, or at least the anecdotal evidence that we have experienced when it comes to who is a direct contact and who is more at risk when it comes to 2, 3, 4 people removed. I get it. But I think the risk that they think they're assuming is, okay, I'm going to send my kid trick-or-treating, or I'm going to have large gathering for Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's Eve, whatever. And they're going to be my kid's friends and they're going to hang out. And if my kids get it and bring it to daycare, it's only going to affect those kids. That's what they don't understand, is that, no, it's more than that. It's, what if one kid doesn't have parents but has grandparents taking care of them, and you just killed them, basically. Indirectly, you've just killed them because you just had to have a New Year's Eve party, or you just had to have your friends have a slumber party, or your kids' friends, rather, have a slumber party.
And knowing how likely it is that kids will be asymptomatic. I mean, a lot of adults are too, but especially kids seem to be asymptomatic, and there's no reason to get them tested if you don't know that they were in direct contact with someone who had it.
Right. And, you know, again, the survival rate, I think when people see that, it's like 98, 99% or whatever. They see that and they think it's not really a big deal. But in terms of the entire population, even if it's a 97% survival rate, 3% of the population is a pretty fucking big chunk of people, right?
And that's only the people who die. That doesn't take into account the people who have long-term health complications,
right?
Which is a much greater percentage of people who have COVID. So, for example, so we want to talk about this because we recently had an experience with a close family friend whose child suffered a very severe complication from testing positive from COVID. And it's something that has not been discussed a lot. It's something that I heard about sort of early on, but it was described as being extremely rare. But I think it's because it was just so new and it wasn't necessarily being connected to COVID at the time. But it's called MISC. It's multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children.
In fairness, I need to make this disclaimer. When it comes to our friend, and I'm only saying this in the event that they're listening, it is not confirmed that she had this, their child. It is not confirmed. They still don't know, they being the doctors, 100% that she, the child, had this. It's likely, but they have not distinguished between this and Kawasaki 100% yet. The doctors lean towards MISC.
Well, they reported it as a case of MISC to the Department of Health.
Oh, okay. I'm just saying, according to our friend that I talked to today, the doctors have not confirmed that.
Well, I think in general, the two syndromes are so
similar
right. but I think they don't have enough data yet, but
that's
it seems like the pattern is that kids who present with this inflammatory syndrome that looks just like Kawasaki disease, the difference is these
COVID,
kids are all also tested positive or have the antibodies for COVID and had it at some point. I think if they, and they're not seeing that, that's not obviously a connection with Kawasaki disease. But they also don't even know what causes Kawasaki disease.
Right.
it's suspected that it's some virus, but they don't know what
it is.
It's
a moot point. It's for the sake of clarity.
It's an emerging issue. It's something that doctors don't know a lot about, but it's becoming more and more evident that young children are susceptible or can develop this complication, even if they have COVID and never show symptoms and are completely asymptomatic.
Right.
Several weeks later, I think it's like between 4 and 6 weeks after the COVID infection, they can develop this terrifying inflammatory disease, which can be fatal. And it doesn't seem like a lot of people are talking about it. Like even, and that I think the doctors at the hospital also told them, and I read this on the CDC website as well, even kids who are exposed to COVID, so who are direct contact but test negative,
Are at risk,
have developed this inflammatory syndrome. So it's like
between 4 to 6 weeks after
exposure.
Yes.
And so it's frustrating because I don't feel like, I know when our daughter had to get tested after the outbreak at the daycare, our pediatrician never mentioned that at all. I mean, because it is so rare and they probably don't want to scare people. But at the same time, like, what?
No. So my friend said that a lot of the, they took it upon themselves to make a post about it on Facebook to raise awareness. Same thing with Instagram. And a lot of the people that are friends with them that are doctors said, or have spouses that are doctors or know someone said they didn't even know about this.
Wow.
I had heard
about it. I knew about it. But here's the thing. We in Rhode Island, we only had one case of this, one child with MISC.
Now we have six.
Since June. And then over the holidays around December, there were five.
Now there's six total, or seven total.
Six more. I can't remember. But yeah, I think the weekend that our friend's daughter was admitted, there were like five, like they were all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's so hard to ignore this timing. That means they were all exposed around the same time, around this like 2 week after Halloween period. And it's just, I wonder, I don't know what the data is for the, in general, like if a lot of kids tested positive during this time or if that was just a coincidence at our daycare. But it seems like also the spike in cases of MISC is, you know, correlated with that as well. But yeah, we just wanted to mention it as sort of a PSA for any of our listeners who do have young children. Not to, you know, scare people. It doesn't seem like it's something that happens often, but it also doesn't seem like it's something a lot of people are talking about. And, you know, our friends didn't know to look out for this. They thought she was out of the woods. She had right. tested positive. She finished her quarantine. She tested negative. She was all good. And then a few weeks later, she just, you know, she had a fever, vomiting, a rash, like bloodshot eyes, like really scary symptoms. And they had to rush her to the ER and she was there for 5 days.
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah. It's serious and severe. And it's just made me kind of rethink the whole thing because all along I've been thinking of, oh, it's not a big deal if our kid catches it. Like, not that it's not a big deal. Like, but my main concern was her spreading it to other people.
Right.
Asymptomatically. I was never really concerned too much about her health implications if she caught it, because the narrative has been it affects older people or people with underlying conditions. It doesn't really affect children.
But, which is by and large true.
Yes, but I think that that's a really important caveat when there is a complication, however rare,
right.
there's a complication that can be fatal. Yes. If you're not aware of it and you don't get treatment early on, you know, that I think that's kind of important for parents to be aware of.
Yeah, I'm not discounting that. And I think that's indicative of, you know, what we're talking about is, you know, people may listen to this and say, well, not my kid. My kid will be fine. And that's sort of indicative of the behavior or the disposition or rather the phenomenon that we're talking about when it comes to the toxicity of all this is that you don't know that, number one. And I think it's just better to err on the side of caution. And, you know, secondly, I just think there's a benefit to look out for people. I think that benefits everybody more than just looking out for yourself. Because when you look out for yourself, there's a sort of immediate gratification. And this, you know, the benefits of that are sort of nearsighted. But if you're operating under, you know, community standards and you're looking out for other people, there are long-term positive effects when it comes to that. So if you're looking at this as just a business transaction, like a psychopath would, you know, or sociopath or something, you know, there are benefits to, you know, you can say whatever, communal, financial, whatever, for you as an individual to operate under utilitarian philosophies of sort of benefiting the largest group of people to make sure they're, you know, happy, to make sure everyone's good, and that includes you. So if we're really talking a deep level of toxic individuality, it is in your benefit as an individual, you know, to sort of self-serve to help the most people around you as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the things that was so there's no win. And, but, well, I mean, I think it's important to say, too, part of the reason why this hit us so hard with, you know, our friend's child going through this is they were like us in how they've approached the pandemic. Mm-hmm. They've been extremely careful. They haven't done anything unnecessary, no social interaction. Like they haven't done anything. They've been isolating, trying to protect themselves and their child and whatever. And the only thing that they did was send her to daycare
right.
to keep up her social interaction, to, you know, continue to advance her education. I mean, she'll be going into kindergarten soon, but, you know, it was her last year at this daycare, and they had to work. Yeah. It's hard to work when you have a young child in the house. And yeah, so they assumed this risk. And I guess what I'm saying is, if people who were all sending their kids to school or daycare were viewing that as being their highest priority of keeping that group safe, mm-hmm. then, and they would have to sacrifice everything outside of that, but that would be a safer place for everyone. And not, it's just, it sucks in the irony that a family who did sacrifice everything for almost yeah. a year, didn't see family or friends, didn't do any recreational activities or socialization, ended up having to go through this like almost lost their child because of an outbreak at a daycare 2 weeks after Halloween. It's just, it again, there's assumption in there. I'm not trying to place blame on any individual family. We don't really know if it was connection, but it's just plausible to say, like, even if you do everything right, even if you, you know, right in the terms of you're following the protocols and you're being mm-hmm. conservative and staying close in your bubble and not interacting outside of your household, you can still get COVID because yeah. you're going about your necessary business. And that's where the community responsibility comes into play. It was the responsibility of everyone else in our daycare to
adhere to protocols,
yes. and try to keep all of us safe. And that didn't happen. And a lot of people got COVID, one of which ended up in the hospital.
Yeah. So I guess the moral of this story, as we wrap it up, is just look out for people. And it's not all about you, especially right now. It's not about you. And it's not all about you. Of course, there are elements of this that, you know, you have to look out for yourself when it comes to, you know, making sure you're good, whatever that means. But if it involves, if your way of being good makes other people at risk, you need to find another fucking way
right.
to make yourself good. Mm-hmm. And that's the struggle. And to me, that's part of being an adult. You got to find a way. So find a way. That's the only advice I can give. And, you know, look out for one another because it's important. And again, if you want to operate under selfish conditions, that's fine. Just know that if you look out for someone else or other people, it will benefit you.
Right. The being, you know, toxically individualistic or selfish.
Nth degree.
Right. It
will benefit you.
Right. Or it could come back to bite you. Yeah. If someone else is doing the same thing, it might end up putting you at risk and you don't know what the outcome is going to be. So I feel like I'm very like idealistic in the way that I talk about this, like a little community bubble or neighborhood or a school that all takes care of each other. And right. I feel like we're all so disconnected that that's just not happening. But we saw the consequences of not taking that approach. And I hope that we can do better.
Right. All right. Let's wrap it up here. If this is new to you, as it was to us, we'd be interested in hearing your perspective on this. We'd be interested in hearing what you have to think about this. Is it something that you have recognized? Is this the first time that you're hearing the term? Is this something that, you know, maybe you want to investigate deeper? Or is this something you completely disagree with? We'd like to hear from you. That being said, if you like what you've heard, you can subscribe to the show. Again, we're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, all of the above. Just subscribe to us there. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, leave us 5 stars and a quick review. If you want to hit us up on our socials, you certainly can by going to Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'll let you give the details. Go ahead. Sorry, I dropped my vitamins.
All right, we're on Parlor. No, just kidding.
We're on Adult Friend Finder. We're on OnlyFans.
What's the other one? MeWe or something?
What the hell is that?
I don't know. These are like all these alternative, like extremist conservative, pro-Trump.
Gab? I think Gab is one.
I don't know. There's a lot.
All right.
Anyway, we are on Facebook at facebook.com/whileshesnapping, on Instagram at whileshesnapping, on Twitter at @shesnappingpod, or you can email us at whileshesnapping@gmail.com.
Hit us up. We'd like to hear from you. I don't know what we're going to discuss next week, but I will say, go Bills. It's looking like, as of right now, at 10 of 10 on January 10th, the Bills are going to square up with the Ravens. on Saturday night at 8:15. Didn't want that. I'd much rather have had Pittsburgh, but it looks like Cleveland's stomping on Pittsburgh.
This was
right
the
now.
Wild card, the Ravens? Yeah.
So we're going to be playing the Ravens, which not happy about that, but we'll see. Anyways, go Bills. Josh Allen, you are my king.
I was going to say, why are you worried? You have Josh Allen.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know. We'll see. Until next week. See you.
Bye.